We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and I'm very pleased to be joined today by Jake Rademacher, who is the director of the new documentary Brothers After War. We are going to talk about that. It's releasing in theaters. You know, not every documentary gets a full release in theaters, and you guys are doing a special event to get tickets to veterans. We're going to talk about that as well. But the first thing I want to talk to you about, Jake, in addition to saying thanks for being on the show today.
Hey, thank you for having me. First of all, you're aging very well because I remember you wrote about Brothers at War years ago. So it's exciting. I appreciate you. I'm happy to be on your show. I appreciate you taking the time to check out the original film years ago and writing about it. And so it's exciting to come back to you and tell you what we've been up to.
Well, it's funny because that's what I wanted to start with here. This is a sequel of sorts. I mean, again, not a lot of documentaries get in theaters. Not a lot of documentaries get sequels. And this is a sequel of sorts to your 2009 film, Brothers at War. I reviewed that 15, 16 years ago when it came out. And it was it's a really stirring look at life for military families. And I say this, I have a personal connection here. My dad was in the Air Force. He served in the Gulf War and, you know, was overseas a lot, was all over the place. So it's something that, you know, hit home for me. And both of these documentaries do, I think, a good job of capturing that family at home, family unsure of what is happening. The tension there between the families and military service and the ideals, you know, that everybody wants to live up to. So thank you for making these documentaries. It means something to me. I want to talk a little bit about the original film first, and then we'll get to the new one. Brothers at War came out in the midst of Iraq, Afghanistan. Everything was still going on. What was the reaction to that at the time? From folks who had served, from families who had family members overseas and were watching this. What was the response to that?
Extraordinary, to be quite honest with you. We opened in 5 movie theaters. We ended up playing in 60 movie theaters. We ended up on Showtime. The film got released around the world. So we accomplished all of our goals as far as what you would want a documentary to get seen by the public and have them engage and see our war fighters on the front lines, and also back on the home front. What is the family going through, right? What surprised us was when Gary Sinise and I went to places like Fayetteville, North Carolina, or Columbus, Georgia, military couples came up to us afterwards and said, we just had our first conversation about his or her experience overseas after seeing Brothers at War together. And I thought, wow, I didn't expect that. That's really important. Is there a way to take that a step further? So journaling had helped me. When I came back from Iraq, and I was literally dodging bullets with Marines and the Iraqi army, and a week later I was in Beverly Hills. And that's a huge adjustment. And what helped me make that adjustment was journaling and my brother Isaac calling me, because he knew I'd been in combat, and saying, hey, how you doing? And I shared some of my experiences, which are a bit, you know, different. And he talked me through those and then told me what to expect. The other thing is I had to tell my experience to my editor and my producer. All of that helped me at the time. I didn't know it at the time, but I was sort of processing post-traumatic stress and turning it into post-traumatic growth. So I came up with this idea to create a journal to go along with the film, because journaling had helped me. I showed it to Gary Sinise. He loved it. Next thing I know, I'm in front of 700 vets back from Iraq showing him the film. We're doing journaling and we're coming up with an entire workshop. It became a 5-base military tour. The military sent out a team to do surveys. They said 94% would recommend it to other military families. The next year, Oklahoma National Guard called. They said, we've lost 14 people in Afghanistan. Could you come help us? I said, sure. We expanded the workshop. We created a workbook specifically for family members like yourself and myself. 6 hours, include a lunch in there. And we dived into topics like, what's it like to lose a friend overseas? And then how are you making sense of that? How can you make sense of that? That workshop has now been done for 40 going on 50,000 service members and their families across America. And in 2019, the Gary Sinise Foundation started sponsoring all those. And they also sponsored this follow-up. So to answer your question, what's different about this film is the first film, I was a fish out of water. You know, I was a brother that wanted to know what his brothers were going through. I'd made the odd choice to actually go into a war zone to reconnect with them and get that sense firsthand. But we take advantage of that in this film because I return to those moments in Iraq that I captured in the first film, you know, and those moments that I shared and experienced alongside these soldiers and Marines. But then this film fast forwards to the modern day. You know, we almost go from the foxhole mm-hmm. to the living room. And in the living room, I ask him questions. I lean into that shared experience that we had. And with the knowledge that we've used the original film to help so many other veterans and families, what I've heard is beautiful about the film is our veterans lower the invisible wall and talk authentically and emotionally about those moments, but also how they're doing right now. And I think we're able to get, you know, really into the nucleus of their emotional journey home and reconnecting and also what's worked for them. And I think that's the power of this film. And I think it's unique because I was actually in the war zone with them. And I've spent more than a decade working with other veterans when they come home and when they take the uniform off to kind of make a positive step into the next chapter of their life. So they shared lessons learned. They also threw me out of an airplane because that's the kind of guys they are. But, you know, but I think that's what's unique about Brothers After War.
Yeah, we'll get to Brothers After War in just one second. Brothers at War resiliency workshops are really interesting to me because, again, you know, a lot of documentaries that come out and they people talk about them, whatever, and they kind of disappear. But it feels like this has been this has kind of turned into your life in addition to, you know, being a thing that really helps a lot of other folks.
It has become my life. I had no idea that I was going to do this. You know, it was a situation where, you know, I was pursuing my acting career. I'd signed at William Morris. I was coming off doing a ton of theater. And my brothers came home and said, the truth is not coming home from Iraq. And mm-hmm. as a brother, I said, okay, you put this to the side and you go tell their story. So I threw myself into that film and that mission. And I thought the mission was going to end, you know, in 2009, 2010, when the film was out there. But I just saw an opportunity. I saw an unmet need and an opportunity to, like, help our vets walk through their experiences. And I saw the film be a tool to make tough topics easier to talk about. And I just couldn't turn away from that. You know, I couldn't. So I threw myself into it. And I started doing these workshops. The next thing I know, in front of 1,000 people coming home from Afghanistan. And they're telling me it's working and it's helping. So I just don't know how you let go of that. So it did become my life. And then in 2019, the Gary Sinise Foundation, you know, took it to the next level. They were like, what do you need? What if we resourced you? What would you do? And I was like, well, I would train trainers. So I've trained 3 trainers. I would build a pre-deployment workshop so that we could get ahead of these things before they go overseas. So we did that. I'd build something for spouses. They sponsored that. And then I said, I want to make this film a follow-up film. And Gary was passionate about me making the film for everyone, just like the first film. I mean, it's going to play in 120 movie theaters, so it's very accessible to all of America. Mm-hmm. But his focus really was, he's like, I want you to build a seminar for vets around the new film like you did around the original. So your question is very good. I have dedicated my life to this. This is 21 years of my life. I didn't expect that when I came to Hollywood from Chicago, that this is what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. But I did 18 plays as an actor, and I did 8 in college. And I can't look you in the eye and say any of those plays saved a person's life. But I can look at you and go, Brothers at War, the workshops, I know it saved at least one Marine's life, and I've been told many more. Mm-hmm. And Brothers After War hasn't even been released yet, and it's already saved a veteran's life who served 22 years in the Navy. So I've just not been able to turn away from that mission. I just felt like while we were at war for more than 20 years, I had to stay connected, and as a family member, do whatever I could to help our veterans from my standpoint.
The movie is going to be in theaters. It's coming out February 28th, and I think you said it was going to be on 120 screens, something like that. Is that right? I want to highlight a cool thing here that is going to happen. You know, the Gary Sinise Foundation has thrown in, I think it's $150,000 to buy tickets for vets who if they live near it and can go see it. They don't have to pay for tickets. They can, how do they get the tickets? I'm going to include links to everything in the email that goes out with this podcast. So if you're trying to figure out where to get the tickets and all that, I'll help you out there, but fill folks in who are listening on there in their cars or on their iPhones or whatever. Where do they go to get the tickets, to go to this movie?
Well, first things first, you can go to tickets.brothersafterwar.com. And you can see all the theaters that we're playing at, and you can buy tickets there. Gary Sinise Foundation has partnered with VetTix, and you have to be either a VetTixer right now or you have to join. But if you do one of those two things as a veteran, first responder, or a family member, the Gary Sinise Foundation will buy you a ticket while supplies last to come see Brothers After War opening weekend. I cannot begin to tell you how excited I am about that, because that was our vision for this. We're putting this film in movie theaters because we want this to be a moment of camaraderie and connection and community. And so the Gary Sinise Foundation is trying to remove all barriers from our veterans and their families coming together as a group and seeing this film in our modern cultural town square, which is the movie theater. Since ancient times, going back, I mean, theater was created by the Greeks for warriors to explain what it was like to be at war and what it was like to come home. So we are reclaiming that space on February 28th and saying we're now going to come back to the origins of this art form. And it's 12 veterans. I mean, it's not my film, really. I'm just a conduit. It's their story. It's 12 veterans sharing their story with the audience of their journey, of what that's like. And we want to enable other veterans and their families and first responders to kind of go en masse and experience that as a community and then have all the conversations that naturally take place after that.
Yeah, and VetTix is a pretty cool organization. I mean, it's 501c3. They get veterans tickets to sporting events, concerts, et cetera, et cetera. So it's nice to see them doing something with movies and movie theaters. As you say, this is a movie to see with people, particularly if you have that shared experience. I think that has to be. I mean, that has to be a big part of the resiliency workshops, right? Is just having everybody there. It's hard to talk to, you know, a therapist one on one. But if you're in, you know, kind of a group situation where there's lots of people there, a little bit easier.
Watching the movie is literally half of the seminar. I mean, to your point, like that does most of the work, almost all of it. And you're 100% right on that. And if you can do it not in your living room where you got your cell phone and your kids and the dogs barking, but you can go into a quiet place and see it on the big screen and surround sound and really lose yourself in those stories. You know, we want veterans to see their story in the stories of the 12 veterans that I follow up with. And I think that creates, you know, it's both a community moment, but a private moment because it's in the dark. It's an opportunity to kind of do a daydream during the day or during the evening, and then have that conversation afterwards. You know, I think you're dead on. You're absolutely right. This is an incredible opportunity. And a couple things here. This is the largest gift of movie tickets to veterans ever. That's how serious Gary Sinise Foundation is about them going to see this film and how hardcore VetTix is leaning into it. We are getting released in many, many theaters across the country where there are tons of veterans and family members. I mean, AMC and Cinemarks and all the other chains as well have stepped up to give us the theaters that we're asking for. And Regal Cinemas has taken it to the next level because they are, I mean, I think we're closing in on about 90 Regal Cinemas across the country where our veterans through VetTix can have this opportunity for camaraderie.
Yeah. Let's give the website one more time. People can go find out where showtimes are and check out the movie.
Absolutely. You go to tickets.brothersafterwar.com. Now, if you go there and you see that the film's not playing in your community, ask your local theater to play it. You know, we have a great distributor, SDG Releasing. They'll work really hard to get it out to them. Or go ahead and email us at info@brothersafterwar.com. We are passionate about getting this film out to as many people as we possibly can, and we will work to try to bring the film to your community.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about Brothers After War here, because it's interesting to kind of check back in on some of these guys after 15, 16 years, you know, and obviously it's been that long of a gap for me because I saw the movie back in 2009. Less of a gap for you since in part they're your family members. I mean, amongst the vets we check back in on are Isaac and Joseph, your brothers. Which it's very interesting, and I don't want to make things weird and awkward for you here, but it does seem like there's a little bit of tension between you and Joseph kind of at the beginning of this movie. What was going on there?
Well, you know, Joe was a pain in my butt 15 years ago and nothing's ever changed. And I think that's sort of some of the fun of the movie is that you get to see it's about relationships, right? And we lean into that. You know, I thought it was kind of fun that here he is, you know, chastising me and chiding me as a 19-year-old, you know, combat vet from Fallujah. And there he is 15 years later still giving me a hard time, you know? And it's a complicated relationship between Joe and I. But I got to tell you, this is Joe's movie. Joe wanted to make this movie. Joe understood intrinsically that this would help other veterans. And he's unbelievably honest at other moments in the film and really opens up and he says why. So, you know, in both films, I do a deep dive, right? The first time I do a deep dive into the war and halfway through, Joe's like, you haven't done enough, man. You don't know what you're talking about. And that inspired me to go back to Iraq and go to the Sunni Triangle and really dive into the dark side of the war. And by the end of that film, you know, he's hugging and rustling and it's me crying, watching him go off to war a second time. Right. In this film, obviously I come at it with a huge head start. I've been to war multiple times. I went another time in 2007 to Baghdad to screen the film. I've worked with tens of thousands of veterans since. So I really have a lot of insight about that stage of a veteran's experience, but there's always more to learn, right? There's always assumptions we come into it with. Even as an educated insider, and Joe and I get into it. And I thought, I'm going to leave this in the movie. I think this is authentic. This is true sibling, you know, interactions. I've gotten great feedback from veterans and also family members about that. There's even an argument that we get into in the film. And in early screenings, you know, Gary Sinise wanted me to play it for some veterans and play it for some civilians and kind of get their feedback. And more often than not, people love that scene. They love that debate. I've had veterans, special operators actually come up to me and say, thank you for keeping that in the movie because people think we're like idiots or that we don't have thoughts and feelings about what's happening. And you had the right people in the film talking about different, you know, policies and different issues and different things about the wars and the aftermath. We really appreciate you showcasing that we have thoughts and feelings. We're thinking about this. You know, that was something that struck me in the first film. These are really intelligent people working really, really hard. They really can't talk too much while they're in the service about their thoughts and feelings about different decisions we're making, right? But afterwards, you know, here we are years later. I know the film takes place right before the fall in Afghanistan, but organically, some of these conversations started happening. And I looked back in the footage and I saw, geez, Joe and I have been talking about the war since he was 19. Let's include some of that. Let's show even how how his thoughts and feelings have changed over time. And I thought it also gave us an opportunity. I mean, I know you're referencing the extra car seats in the car. And I mean, it's just everyone laughs so hard at that. And they just get a kick out of Joe giving me such a hard time. And we wanted to have a lot of humor in the film and have our light moments too. But, you know, that dynamic extends over to much more serious topics as well. And I think it brings those ideas to life. And I think those things are very important for us as a society to think about and consider and discuss and debate. And so I thought it was very important to include those aspects in the movie. And in fact, not even include, I would have had to exclude them from the film. And at the end of the film, you know, Joe and I are reflecting on Afghanistan and sort of like, and then also Iraq, and also, you know, you get to Tunisia with Isaac, like kind of just taking a look at the modern landscape and what have we learned over the last 15 years of this war. And I think it's an interesting conversation to have between two brothers on a military base in Italy, one who's deployed 9 times, you know, with the other one who's been 3 times as a filmmaker and spent 20 years working with our vets, right before we go off to another brother who's on his 7th and final deployment in Tunisia. You know, and I think we as a society, when we send our best out the door overseas and we ask them to go 9 to 13 times, like some of the folks in this film, we owe it to ourselves and to them to sit back and have conversations, philosophical conversations, debates about, you know, when to intervene, when not to, what should that look like? What did we get right? What maybe we could have done a little bit better? What's the impact of this service on our vets? And so that's why I actually feel like the friction between Joe and I is actually very valuable in the film, because I think it gives a lot of comedic relief at some great points. But it also allows these topics, which could have been drier in another documentary, to actually come to life a little bit when we kick these ideas around.
Well, you definitely feel the... It's hard not to get emotional about this sort of thing, particularly when we look at how things wound up in Afghanistan. You know, when we think about how things worked out in Iraq, the rise of ISIS, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, like, it's hard not to get emotional about this sort of thing. But that, you know, set aside the policy, the question, the policy debates and all that, there are other emotions here which involve the loss of friends, death of squad mates. I mean, that's one of the harder moments in the film is talking to the guys who either lost friends in combat or afterward. Can you talk about that a little bit and what it meant to hear their stories through the mouths of their friends?
Well, we really could only show me crying one time to the audience in the film, you know? yeah. I was very moved. I knew Sammy. He was a great, great guy. He was actually the one who volunteered to take my little camera into the hide site. He is someone who I literally, you know, bunked up with all those guys. My bed was in the barracks when I was overseas. So I watched TV with those guys. I played board games with those guys. I went out to the Syrian border with those guys. Sammy in particular was my brother named his daughter after Sammy. He was overseas in Afghanistan when Sammy died. So talking to Isaac and talking to Derek and seeing these guys get emotional years later. And I followed up with Derek on Memorial Day, kind of by design, kind of as a way to, you know, homage to Sammy. And, you know, we lost 6,700 in Iraq and Afghanistan. And for every 6,700 that we lost, we have to think that they all had friends that were like brothers to them, because they have the bond that you receive when you're in combat with someone. They have families back home and widows and moms and dads. So the ripple effect is huge. And what I've learned in my work doing this for almost 20 years is you don't heal if you don't talk about it. It's time to talk about it as a nation. It's time to tell people. And sometimes our vets don't know that. When you're in combat, it's not really the time to talk about your feelings. You know, you really got to kind of suppress them and move on and focus on survival and focus on your teammates and all that other stuff, right? That's true. But what I oftentimes, light bulbs go off in veterans' eyes when I go, hey, now you actually need to talk about it. And by talking about it, you'll process your experience. And if you talk about it to your families, you're going to pull them in a little bit and they're going to understand a little bit more. You know, maybe why if there's a loud noise, you jump, or why you get sad on a certain day, or, you know, and sometimes veterans need to go a little further in their journey to really heal. You know, sometimes those wounds are a little infected. Counseling or warrior path, like Chris McKay talks about, these things, these deeper experiences, these 7-day experiences with you know, 7 or 8 other vets can really allow you to walk through and heal from those experiences and then move on. And I know it sounds crazy, but one thing I've discovered myself personally when I lost my own brother, and also from working with others who've lost their brothers and sisters overseas, is you can actually grow from these experiences. You'd never trade the growth for, you know, you trade the growth to have your friend back, 100%. Mm-hmm. But we can't control what happens in life. We can only control how we respond. And if you choose to memorialize, if you choose to work through that grief and maybe do something in honor of that person, first of all, you can be inspired by them. As Isaac talks about the end of the film, Isaac says, for many of us, we're going to make the most of the next chapter of life for our friends who don't get that chance. And that is the name of the game. You came back from overseas. You're here now. It's very important that you make the most of the rest of your life. And so it's important for us to talk about our fallen. It's important to honor them. It's important to go through anything that still troubles us about the past, because you have to thrive. You have to transition that, you know, growth. Everything that lives is growing in something that died. You know, the fertilizer is plants that have died, and now new life comes from that. And that's what we need to have happen as a nation, but even more specifically as our veterans. They've got to start to use those experiences as an opportunity for growth into the future.
Yeah. And I do want to, like, I want, you know, suicide in the service community is a huge and continuing problem. And I one of the things I think that's important about your workshops about these movies is the way they try to give people a path forward. They try to help people, you know, again, just talk through what the issue is. In your experience, having, again, done so many of these workshops, having done, you know, 2 of these movies now, having shown it all over, what is your best advice for folks who have somebody in their life who is struggling, who has come back from combat and doesn't seem quite right? You know, they maybe need a little help, but also without being, you don't want to be overbearing about it. You know, I like, it's a hard path for somebody who has not experienced it to walk. What is your advice for them?
I hope this doesn't sound self-serving, because I really don't mean it that way, but I'm going to be completely honest. And that's the reason why we're going through all the pain, struggle, and suffering to put the film in movie theaters, because we think it's a lot easier to ask a veteran who's struggling to say, hey, you want to go see this movie in the movie theater? It's about veterans. Gary Sinise, Lieutenant Dan executive produced it. You want to go check it out? Because we've seen how that going to see a movie can actually make tough subjects easier to talk about. And a lot of vets have then opened up with a friend afterwards, because it goes, you know, oh yeah, you know, when Gunner's talking about that moment with the Iraqi, I experienced something like that. Or, you know, when Derek's talking about that loss, I experienced that. And the other thing about it is, in the film, the veterans talk about what they've done to get to the next place in their life. It's so much more powerful for them to tell you, as a comrade, as someone who's walked the same path, what they've done, and you can see the results. You know, when the sniper talks about going to get counseling 22 times, and now he's the best father of a kid with special needs, okay, well, that's how it worked for him. When Jen talks about using art as a way to express herself and heal, and then you see her as a doctor working with kids with special needs, that's a powerful thing. When you hear Ben Fisher say, use the GI Bill, and you see him talk about making a decision to actively make good choices. You know, he talks about going into the bar and the Vietnam veteran saying, if you keep coming here, you're going to be me in 30 years. And he goes, yep, okay, got it. Drives across the country to a place he's never been, goes to California, and is like finding his path, going back to school, trying to find a job, not taking the easy path, but going for what he really wants to do. And he articulates that journey so well. And here he is now, he's got a beautiful family. He's got a couple kids. He owns a business in Long Island. And his message is, you can do anything. You can be an artist. You could start your own business. You know, the attributes you have learned and honed and experienced in the military, whether you went to war or not, are invaluable in the rest of your life. But you got to be willing to change. You got to be willing to face the bad stuff, the negative stuff, and work through it. So the reason why we are releasing this film in movie theaters is because we know it's very hard to have that conversation. So bring them to the movie, let the film do the talking for you. They're going to pick up tons of great, you know, solutions weaved into the film from the 12 veterans talking about their experience. They're going to see other vets talking to their brother or their friend about their own emotional reality. You know, that's a great icebreaker, right? For the conversation yourself, because you're modeling that behavior. You're seeing them do the same thing that really you need to do as well, or you want your friend to do, or you want your brother or your father to do. And frankly, you're giving that person a little bit of a break, because to be honest, people would ask me, what's it like to go to war? And I'd be like, I'm a professional communicator. I need like 2 hours of your time and a world-class composer. And I need 200 hours of footage and an editor to put a dent in it. So I really think that's the easiest step. Now, beyond that, I'll give a couple tips. Beyond that, I think veterans are concerned sometimes when they share, are you going to be able to handle it? Are you going to judge me? So if you really want to be there for someone, you know, you don't have to have a degree or a license and a family member. You have to check your intentions. Why are you asking the question? Are you asking the question because you want to be there as a resource to let them listen? Because if you are, and are you also ready to not judge? Or if they say something crazy that happened overseas, are you going to be okay and just be able to listen and just not react really quickly and just be a good listener and then say, man, that must have been really tough. You know, tell me more about that. How are you trying to work that out? What are you doing to try to figure, you know, work your way through that? You know, that's a great first step that all of us can do with the veterans in our life. It's hard to tell somebody, hey, I think you might need to go talk to a counselor, right? But I got to tell you, I've been in space a long time. Sometimes that's what it takes. Sometimes a family member has to say, you got to go talk to somebody because I love you and I want to be with you, but you're like, this is really affecting you in a way. For veterans, if there's a veteran listening, one of the things we say in our seminars is, you know, half the counselors out there aren't any good and the other half will save your life. So if you go talk to a counselor and you don't like them, you don't think they get you, move on. You know, Noel Lapana, one of our trainers, likes to say he's promiscuous with his counselors. So he doesn't mind dating a couple until he commits to the right one. So that's another thing to talk about, to consider and to think about. And then one thing that is, you know, your question was, as a family member, what could I do? Look, you're probably already supporting them. You're probably already trying to, like, you know, if you see me even do this in the film sometimes, you know, make space for them to, you know, be a little touchy or edgy around certain topics or whatever. I think it's important to understand that from a veteran standpoint, and here's some statistics: 40% post-traumatic stress, 60% of USC studies say they experience feelings of loneliness, 30% are at risk for suicide. We've lost 6,700 in country. We've lost 35,000 to suicide. We've lost 120,000 to suicide in the last 20 years of all generations of veterans. So please realize that sometimes a veteran, what they tell me is the reason they don't do it is because they're afraid or because of love. They're afraid of what's going to happen to their kids if they're not there. They're afraid of leaving their wife or their spouse behind, or they love them so much that they're willing to try to endure and find a solution. So just know that just being in their life, loving them is a huge thing that you're doing. You may be holding them there. I would say another thing you can really look at doing is encourage them to contact and stay in contact with their friends that they served with, and encourage them to have friends outside of service. Mm-hmm. Our veterans need to talk and create relationships with people outside of that circle, because this is the new era of their life. And community is a really important part of healing and moving forward. So, you know, there's three or four different ideas that someone who, if they have someone in their life and they're looking to see what they could do, there's three or four things that might really move the needle.
Yeah. Yeah. not to shift gears too hard here. You mentioned using Gary Sinise as a hook to get, you know, veterans out. I know vets love Gary Sinise. And if you haven't read or listened to Gary Sinise's memoir, Grateful American, A Journey from Self to Service, you should. It's really good, not just because it's got a lot of interesting stuff about his time in the Chicago theater and, you know, working there and in the movies, but also because he spends a lot of time talking about his work with the Lieutenant Dan Band and his foundation, which again has provided $150,000 to you guys for tickets for this movie, and has sponsored these workshops and is found. What was all of this is lead up to. How did Gary Sinise get involved with you guys? I mean, what has his support been like in terms of getting you off the ground for the sequel, getting the workshops made, giving you cred with the community of vets out there? Like, what did his support mean for you?
Oh my goodness, it was tremendous. I mean, so I went to Iraq a third time to screen the film overseas for General Petraeus's public affairs folks overseas and the Kentucky National Guard and a bunch of others. And they loved it, right? And there was a Marine colonel there that said, you should show this to Gary Sinise. And I'm like, do you got his cell phone number? Because we're not all drinking at the same cantina back in LA, okay? I'm happy to screen the film for Gary Sinise. You know? Well, I get back. I'm in the lobby of William Morris. I'm waiting to audition for something, God knows what. And a friend of mine who is a Marine, I share this story with him. And he had been a corporal in the, in the Marines. And he goes, I know Gary. I think he'd love your film. In fact, I'm going to have lunch with him later this week. So he told Gary about it. I got invited to a lunch, talking to Gary. And then I met John Voight, kind of. And John Voight got excited about the film. And then he saw it. And then he told Gary what he thought. And then Gary Sinise emailed me. He's like, Jesus, John loves your film. And I got a call 2 days before Thanksgiving. Hey, Gary'd love you to come over to CBS and show the film to him. Are you available? Now, the truth is, I was scheduled to jump on an airplane and go home for Thanksgiving. But I was like, yeah, sure. Nothing going on. No problem. Mom, I'll be there, but I'll be rolling up in the driveway right as you put the turkey on the table, you know? So I went over there and it was Gary Sinise and Norman Powell and myself, just the three of us. We watch Brothers at War. Film finishes. He just sits there silently for like 5 minutes. And he goes, Jake, it's a very important film. And he volunteered to spread the word and to talk about the film and help be its champion. And he also started telling me what to do all the time. So I thought, okay, we got to make this official. And I asked him to be executive producer. He said, I'd be honored to have my name on your film. It tells the American public what I've been trying to tell them about who we have serving us and who are their families. And so he then went and championed the film. He physically flew to military towns with me and, you know, did press and shook hands and did the Q&As with me, went on national television to alert the world that this film existed. You would think normally that'd be the end of it, but I brought him the journal. He loved it. He's the one who set up the first five base tour. This new film, and since 2019, all of it is sponsored by the Gary Sinise Foundation. And they were like, this is a great resource. This is awesome. How can we make it better? And they challenged me to do that. So I went from five workshops a year to like 25 from their sponsorship, and from one guy doing it to a team of four people doing it, University of Pepperdine doing a study on it with Dr. Wasserman. So, you know, that the other thing for the sequel, when it was an idea, Gary Sinise wrote me a check to go and do the proof of concept. So I went out and that some of what's in the movie, that first interview with Isaac, that first interview with Hunter, that was from Gary going, let's give this a crack. Let's see what's in this idea. And then this film is 100% from the beginning when it was an idea. I mean, Gary might have even come up with the idea. I don't know if it was his idea or my idea. It came out of a conversation. You know, he said, I want to know how they're doing and what they need. And so as soon as the film was finished, you know, I screened it for him. And then it was just him and me sitting in a room. He's watching the film. I was super nervous, you know, the first time I screened it for him. And, you know, you've seen the film. It's funny, right? But the first time you watch something, it's kind of funny. And with such a serious concept, you're like, I got to be honest. In my mind, I was like, what were you thinking, Jake? Like, I mean, like, I can't believe I'm sitting here with Gary Sinise. He's watching me like do something ridiculous. And he starts laughing and he goes, I'm so glad the foundation made this film. And I was just like, oh, what a relief. And then after he saw the film, I got the founder at Steppenwolf. This is a guy who's a hero of mine. I started my career in Chicago, like giving me notes, telling me like, he gave me all these notes. And for 2 months I worked on his notes. I did the easy ones first. And then he was like, I'm not sure if this is the right order of, you know, characters. And I was like, you know, which the veteran stories, are we doing them in the proper order? And I was like, I literally looked at the thing. I'm like, what is he talking about? You know, I said, okay, guys, let's start mixing it up. And then halfway through that process, we were like, oh my God, he's right. We've got to restructure this in order to kind of have the film find itself. And so, you know, this is really, this film, Brothers After War, Gary Sinise's fingerprints are all over it. Another thing that's really special about Gary is I had Final Cut in my first film. He gave me Final Cut. He let me make the film I wanted to make. And when he gave me direction, he would say, look, has the film made its point and then it makes it again? Or I think we've got to have a little bit of humor in here. Like, do you have anything from the footage? And that's how me on the tut-tut where I'm like bouncing all over the place and it's raining and, you know, that I put that in after he made that comment because, you know, and audiences have told me they really love that. They really love some of the light stuff in there to kind of, you know, give everybody a break and a good laugh as we then get into Honduras, you know, and into some more serious conversations. So I would just say that, you know, this donation with VetTix and the Gary Sinise Foundation and the incredible support of Regal Cinemas with its almost 100 movie theaters, you know, this is just the latest example of something Gary's been doing since 1984 when he did Tracers and Vietnam vets came onto stage and hugged him and Lieutenant Dan and now Brothers After War. He's throwing his entire weight behind our vets and trying to focus the national attention on the people I think are the best part of my generation, which are those who volunteered to go to war sometimes up to 13 times for the rest of us. And I believe Gary joins me 100% on that. We just want to say thank you to them. And God bless. And we just want to give them this gift of a film so that they can enjoy it with their families and that, you know, meaningful conversations can take place. And that so the rest of the world can take an hour and 42 minutes and see, feel, think, hear what it's like to be a veteran coming back into society.
Yeah. I always like, that was everything I wanted to ask. I mean, this is great. I always like to ask if there's anything I should have asked, if you think there's anything folks should know about your movie, about the world of vets, anything. What should we have discussed that we did not discuss today?
You know, Gary Sinise always says, we can never do enough, but we can always do a little bit more. And so I would just invite the audience to do whatever you can right there at your local level. You just never know the impact you can have on a veteran's life just by mentoring them or giving them some advice, having a conversation, being there for them. These are fantastic people and they have so much more to give to our society. And if you just lean in a little bit and maybe not always ask them to reach out, but we reach in, I think we can have an incredible impact on our veterans who've done so much for us.
Jake, thank you for being on the show today. Again, I've been talking to Jake Rademacher, the director, producer, et cetera, of Brothers After War. Make sure if it's playing near you, go see it in the theater. If it's not, ask them to play it. I think you'll enjoy it. Jake, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Sonny.
And again, my name is Sonny Bunch. I am culture editor at The Bulwark, and I'll be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.